Once again, the theme of our series all week long, The Color of Money. That's Mo Money, Mo Problems, the Grammy-nominated album from the Notorious B.I.G., Life After Death. It's the theme of a look that we are taking at the economic changes taking place in the U.S. economy and how it is affecting disparities that already exist between racial groups, people of color, communities of color, and things like health care, unemployment, layoffs. Joining us to kind of lay out some of the themes that we've explored this week and take a look back is Sudhir Venkatesh. He's the William B. Ransford Professor of Sociology at Columbia University, author of Gang Leader for a Day and Off the Books, The Underground Economy of the Urban Poor. He's right here in our studio. Sudhir, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Good to be here.
You know, The Color of Money was an idea that we had to explore some of the sociological trends that may be either accelerated or decelerated by the recession. What are the themes as you've seen them?
Well, in the shows that you've aired, they've been fascinating, and I think what they point to is that the low-income population in the U.S. really is in a different economy entirely, different kinds of currency, different kinds of social supports, different kinds of regulation, different kinds of adjustments that they have to make. And I think that's hard for many of us to see. Last night I called a bodega store owner on 106th and I asked him this question because I knew he was going to get rid of his cash register. A bodega store owner in a poor neighborhood, he says about 40 to 50% of his transactions are in cash. So he gets food stamps, he gets promises of labor, and he sells those promises of labor. It's tough for most of us to think about an economy like that, but that's what poor people are living in, because something totally different.
He's down to 40% cash transactions. Everything else is barter or government-issued paper of some kind that's not money.
That's right. I want a can of soup. I come in there, and I promise to paint a house for 5 hours. He takes my promise of 5 hours of paint, and he sells it to someone else, and that person goes on and on and on. So what you see is that people get wrapped up in a whole different world that's outside the mainstream economy that's really very different than what middle-class people live in.
Now, you know, some people often like to describe phenomena like these as sort of the entrepreneurial spirit and the example of the creativity of communities under economic stress. But I'm wondering if this is this isn't a form of a response to desperation, and that we should be alarmed by this, not admiring of the cleverness.
That's right. You always want to some degree admire the creativity. The problem in today's age is that, as your shows have shown, poor people are just getting farther and farther from mainstream institutions. They're not going to banks, they're going to loan sharks. When they're in debt, they're going to prison. They're not able to call friends for help. That's the troubling sign, is that in tough economic times, low-income people get marginalized even more than they already are, and it takes even more to bring them back.
All right, let's talk about the bring them back for a moment. You are suggesting that the worlds are already pretty separate, that the recession accelerates a kind of total break, but that the attempt to use government means to reverse the economic trends is almost impossible or limited because the disconnection means the government can't reach them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's really big. Here's an example. There are a lot of firms in New York that might hire a janitor to clean their offices. And right when the recession starts to hit, they won't really lay them off. They'll be paying them $20 an hour. They'll hire them back at $7 an hour under the table. So what happens? Is that person outside the economy or inside the economy? He's cleaning the same office. So it's a weird kind of place where people are both marginal and they're still functioning in the economy.
You know, when the economy changed significantly in the 1970s, the economists began to note that there was this group of people called the discouraged workers who you couldn't measure anymore, who were actually unemployed, but they'd just given up on the economy. And so the unemployment rate changed. It used to be a measure of people who were out of work. Now, only the people who want to get work are measured in the official unemployment rate by the Department of Labor, but this so-called discouraged workers is a kind of a leftover sociological indicator of something that happened back in the 1970s. What are we going to be measuring, 20 years from now that reflects these trends that you're talking about, do you think?
Yeah, you really have to almost double and in some cases triple what we people call the unemployment rate to really find out the number of people that have given up work, that are no longer even interested in looking at work and totally out of the labor force. I think another trend that we're going to see is the rise in subcontracting, that people don't get unionized jobs with all of these supports. They go in and they work at will. They may work for a particular job and then get laid off. They may come back if there's work available. That's really hard to track. because those people aren't reporting their work in the same way. But it's a different kind of labor arrangement. And the key for government is, what are the kinds of supports that someone needs for 5 weeks between jobs? How do you get them the stability that they need to be able to pay their bills and so on and get back on their feet, get reskilled?
Are we talking about a racial divide here or just a class divide here?
I would say in the last 20 years, it's a little bit more class. I mean, certainly disproportionately, minorities face these kinds of problems of moving in and out of the labor force with no social supports. But it really is a low-income problem where you have whites and Asians and African-Americans and so on. We are really at a different age today.
If you're in this recession and are facing some of the problems that you've described here, is your ability as a black worker, a Hispanic worker, or a white worker better or worse able to get out of this on your own?
If you are a minority in this country and you're trying to get up from a job loss or trying to get into the economy again, you're always facing a tougher time. And the key to actually trying to do something for those groups is to work at a community level, to saturate the community in a sort of a WPA style with financial literacy, promote savings, get jobs locally, because people only get jobs through networks. And if everyone in your social network can't find a job, then you're sort of trapped not only by your own inability to find a job, but also by everyone else around
you.
So
a federal stimulus package that addressed that kind of community-based infrastructure, that would work. But that's not what we're doing.
No, and we have an example in land trusts, for example. We put land in a trust for the public good. We could have community economic trusts where all of the resources for a particular period of time stay locally and help everyone locally. That's the kind of innovative work that microfinancers, for example, use that we need to borrow.
You know, I don't know about you, but the most disturbing fact for me before we go in all of the stuff we talked about this week was the healthcare disparity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the emergency room is basically the healthcare system for the urban poor. It's an awful place to be. And healthcare and housing are really the things that people feel the worst in the economy right away.
And those are getting worse, particularly getting, the emergency rooms.
Those are getting much worse. Absolutely. And the emergency rooms are just getting flooded.
So is there a policy prescription aside from the community-based trust idea that we should send off to our listeners as a takeaway this week?
You know, now we go back to the social contract. What is the social contract that keeps us together? It used to be the marketplace for 100 years. Now we have to reinvent what it is that actually keeps American society together. We have to think of a new bond that makes America a collective unit.
Obama talks the talk. Do you think it's likely to happen in this administration?
I think so, but I really think it's about getting rid of the kind of demons that haunt us when we hear words like collective, socialist, distribution, these sorts of things.
Big government bad.
Big government is bad. We have to find new language that brings us together, and it's a good start.
Well, Sudhir Venkatesh is the William B. Ransford Professor of Sociology at Columbia University. He's the author of all kinds of books, including Gang Leader for a Day and Off the Books, The Underground Economy of the Urban Poor, helping us to look back at a series called The Color of Money. Disparities in experiencing this recession. Thanks so much, Sudhir.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.